This is very important topic, in that also there are lot of misunderstanding regarding jhana theory and practice. Perhaps during our discussions, you may ask some questions, and then we can clarify them. We cannot say everything about jhanas in a short time like this. I have to focus on certain aspects of jhanas. Let me start with the practical side of jhana, and then we can develop a theme. Jhana practice is somewhat difficult because it requires very strong, deep, powerful concentration. Not too many people can concentrate due to various reasons, especially because of the time they have, time available for them to do the practice. It needs long sitting, because jhana you cannot attain while engaged in various activities. You got to have a specific quiet time, a place and the environment to gain jhanas. Buddha mentioned many qualities of the suitable environment for the practice of jhana. Some of them are appasaddhani, appani ghosani, vijana vatani, manusya raha seyakani, and patisallana saruppani. These words mean less noise, not completely quiet place without any noise, because we never find a place where there is no any noise. Appa saddhani, less sounds. Also you don't find any place without any sound. Some sound or another you will have. Vijana vatani, a place where there is an atmosphere without people. Vijana means absence of people. Vatani means environment. Environment without too many people, too many activities. Manusya raha seyakani means suitable for hiding away from people. Then patisallana saruppani, suitable for living as ideal, in ideal solitude. These are the basic requirements for a suitable place to practice jhanas. When we say this, don't get discouraged. Don't think that, well, it is beyond our reach. It is only for the monastics who have time to devote to the practice. No, even lay people can practice it, provided they find suitable place. Once they found the suitable place, then we also have to find a suitable psychological environment. One is called physical separation. That is getting away from hustle, bustle, busy places and finding this kind of environment. And the other is psychological environment, creating our own mental states. That is, the mind has to be in that particular state. Suppose somebody assumed, found a place like this, quiet place, and mind is also ready for this practice. Unlike in other type of meditation like Vipassana meditation, for Jhana meditation you go to find a subject and focus your mind totally, completely on that particular subject without letting mind wander here and there. Suppose somebody found a place and have this environment and found a subject and try to focus the mind on it, the sitting place is very quiet, very comfortable, the temperature is very good, air is very good, no mosquitoes, no gadflies, no other disturbances, everything is very quiet, comfortable, peaceful, and suitable for this practice. Then our Mara is always with us. Mara would not let us do anything good. When everything we found comfortable, Mara find a way to disturb us. And this is the first, remember when Buddha attained enlightenment, he defeated Mara's army. But Mara, he did not subdue or defeat Mara himself or itself. I tell you that later on. Anyway, our Mara is always following us. When everything is very conducive to the practice, then Mara sends his first army, the front line fighters. That is, some people are so quickly surrender to this Mara's army, and they get so quickly succumb to Mara's force. As soon as they sat in that comfortable position, they just sink into jhanas. And then maybe they may be sitting for an hour or so, and then open their eyes. Suppose we are ringing a bell or some sound occurs, so the person opens his eyes and says, "Well, I just managed to attain the fourth jhana." The person does not know. It simply happened to him. Very quick. So the person is very happy because the environment is good, the place is good, subject is good, seats are good, everything is quiet, peaceful, and then the person is deceived to be thinking that he or she has attained jhanas. What really has happened is the Mara's army sent him to put him to sleep. And it is so sweet. Sleepiness is the first army of Mara. And it is very much like jhanas. That is why people are so deceived by this, by sleepiness. I bet you many people who talk about jhanas and attaining jhanas are very good sleepers on meditation cushion. And then they always continue to have this deception to think that they have attained jhanas. And therefore, when you are in that state, you don't know. People say, when you attain jhana, I say this is, sleepiness is very much like jhana. They, equate that with jhana. Because of another deceptive, confused thinking, that is, as soon as you attain the first jhana, you lose everything. That's a wrong belief. Because that happens when you go to sleep. When you are in sleep, you don't hear any sound. You don't have any feelings. You are completely lost to the world. And Buddha compared this state to imprisonment. When you are in a prison, you don't know anything going on around the prison walls. You are cut off from everything. Or our state of mind at that time is very much like muddy water. When the water is muddy, you cannot see your reflection in that water. Because mind, just like that, mind becomes so cluttered, cloudy, muddy, you don't know anything. So, this is the first thing we have to overcome when we want to attain jhanas. Now, this we call, as you all know, hindrance. This hindrance is called hindrance because it hinders, it blocks our way of attaining concentration, gaining jhana. So, then what happens, what we should do, instead of focusing mind on the subject of concentration, we had to take care of sleepiness. When we try to take care of sleepiness, we cannot focus our mind on the subject. So we have to temporarily sidetrack ourselves deliberately to get rid of this sleepiness. And then that is another kind of meditation. Taking care of sleepiness is another practice of meditation. For that, we have to arouse our energy. So one thing we recommend, we had to remember to overcome sleepiness. Now, without overcoming sleepiness, in meditation you can never attain jhana. I think you've got to remember that. These are the difficulties, not you are being layman, another person being a monastic. Layman and monastic are irrelevant. Whether you are layperson or monastic is not the issue. But the real issue, this happened even to monastic as well as to lay people. Sleepiness, monastic will fall asleep on meditation cushion as well as a lay person. So this is, you got to get rid of this wrong concept, misunderstanding that only the monastic can attain that state, not lay people. What we have to overcome is this particular defilement, hindrance, sleepiness. To overcome sleepiness, we have to use some techniques. One is called Aloka Sanya. Aloka Sanya is another kind of meditation. That is, perception of light. That means we have to visualize a very bright light. While we are visualizing very bright light, we step out of our focus on the subject of meditation, the jhanic meditation. So, visualize bright light, and sometimes even bright light can arise when we try to gain jhanas. But that will not happen at the very beginning. So, visualize bright light and focus the mind on that bright light until your mind becomes very energetic and sleepiness fades away. If that does not happen, does not help, then you got to pinch your earlobes using your thumb and index finger hard enough to wake you up. But make sure not to chicken out. Do it hard. Also don't use your nails so that you will make it more painful. But you have to make it so hard so that you will wake you up. If that doesn't work, get up and do walking meditation. That is where you need vipassana. You know, we are trying to practice jhana, but to help jhana, we practice vipassana. It is very interesting. Sometimes people think jhana has to be practiced only, purely when we want to practice jhana, we must practice jhana alone, without doing anything else. But this jhana vipassana or samatha vipassana, as I said, are partners, not competitors, but supporters. They are complementary to each other. I show you later on the connection between these two, but for now you have to remember, whenever we find difficulty in practicing jhana, trying to gain concentration, then we use vipassana. In this case, do get up and stand and do standing meditation, pay mindful thought and mindful attention to standing, and then slowly do walking meditation. Since your objective is to gain concentration, jhana, after walking, when you when your mind became energetic, slowly come back and sit down and try to pick up your original subject. and try to focus your mind on it. Maybe after a short while, you may fall asleep again. So the walking did not work. Then you get up and wash your face with cold water. When you wash your face with cold water, perhaps that might help to get rid of your sleepiness. And if that doesn't work, you may take a deep breath and hold it. Hold it as long as you can, and then take another deep breath and hold it as long as you can, and slowly breathe out. When you do this several times, your body warms up and your sleepiness disappears, mind becomes energetic, and you can focus the mind on the breathing. And if none of these things works, if you still feel sleepy, by all means go and have a nap. And then come back and try to meditate. Now, Buddha always advised us to do the practice, especially for the monastic who have to follow certain rules with regard to food. He advised us to practice meditation after meals, not soon after meals, not soon after midday meal. In order to make the jhana practice meaningful and one can gain concentration, after midday meal, one should take rest and then get rid of the heaviness of head caused by big meal, then get up and try to practice meditation. When sleepiness disappears, then sleepiness disappears because of what we call the thought of energetic thought of what is called initial application of thought. Now, what is initial application of thought? We always talk about initial application of thought and sustained application of thought. When you look at books, commentaries, sub-commentaries, English translations, you may see initial application of thought is mind come into the object. This is how it has been explained. Mind come into the object and trying to focus it on the object. The example given is in the text is not the text actually, in the commentaries. One thing, when we try to learn about jhanic meditation, if you read the commentarial material, then perhaps it will be somewhat confusing. They try to explain things clearly, but instead of explaining and making it easy, because of the different type of explanation, some of the things have become even more difficult and more confusing, especially this initial application of thought. The example given in the commentaries is that a bee coming around and buzzing around a flower. Flower represents the concentration. The bee buzzing around is trying to sit on the flower. And that buzzing around the flower, to sit on the flower of the bee, is called neighborhood concentration. That is called upachara samadhi. And the sustained application of thought is just like the bee sitting on the flower. That is true concentration. I have to use certain Pali words to make this meaning clear. In the Pali language, the words used or translated into English as initial application of thought is called vitakka. What is vitakka? Vitakka, you know, to get the real meaning of this, we've got to know the meaning of the Pali word. This is why Pali language comes quite handy, knowledge of Pali. Vitakka, in text, not in the commentaries, text, the word vitakka is explained as kusala vitakka, akusala vitakka, wholesome vitakka and unwholesome vitakka. Sometimes it is called sankappa, kusala sankappa, akusala sankappa. So sankappa means thoughts, wholesome thought called kusala sankappa, unwholesome thought is called akusala sankappa. That means the vitakka means, in this particular case, wholesome thoughts. What are the wholesome thoughts? There are three wholesome thoughts. Now remember, I am trying to explain how the mind comes to concentration, how the mind becomes energetic when the sleepiness disappears. Okay? How the mind becomes energetic when the sleepiness disappears is when this wholesome thought arises. What are the wholesome thoughts? Kusala sankappa or kusala vitakka. Vitakka, sankappa, both are used synonymously in Pali. Vitakka and sankappa, both are synonymous. Now, kusala vitakka, kusala means wholesome. Kusala, that's a very beautiful word. Kusala also is a very beautiful word. Kusala, that which cuts off the negativity, that which cuts off the negativity is called kusala. Something that cuts off, sever the negative state is called kusala. So this particular thought severs, cuts off negative state of mind. Now, initial application of thought does not mean that. It doesn't mean cutting off anything. And also we must remember the word jhana has two meanings. One is called aramana upanijjana, other is called Lakkhan Upanijjhana. Upanijjhana means, jhana means to burn. Burn. Burn for, by focusing mind on something, we burn something else. And that has two types of burning. That means when we look at the characteristics of all objects, we burn something, and when we focus the mind on something, we burn something else. Meaning, when we gain concentration, we burn hindrances. When we focus, when we gain the knowledge of characteristics are, what are the characteristics? Impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and selflessness, that goes to vipassana. So when we practice vipassana, we can gain jhana, that's called vipassana jhana. When we practice concentration, we gain jhana, that is called samatha jhana. In both cases, what we do is burning some psychic irritants. When we concentrate, we burn hindrances. When we gain insight, we burn the opposite of permanence, self, and satisfaction, what you call pleasure. The notion of permanence is a wrong notion, because things are not permanent, and we get rid of that when we practice vipassana. The notion that things are always pleasurable is a wrong notion that we burn by gaining the knowledge of unsatisfactoriness. And the notion of permanent self is a wrong notion that we burn by gaining selflessness, or seeing selflessness. So, and along with that, we also burn greed, hatred, and delusion. We get into that later on, but I just want to mention, you know, as a passing remark, the meaning of vipassana jhana. When we practice vipassana, also we gain jhana. When we see rising and falling and rising and falling and rising and falling of all conditioned things, mind becomes calm, serene, peaceful, happy, and gain concentration. And then gain jhana. And that is called vipassana jhana. And there we burn the greed, hatred, and delusion. Now, therefore, when we use the word jhana, we got to remember there are two types of jhana, or many different types of jhanas. One is samatha, one is vipassana. Samatha jhana, vipassana jhana. I started talking about samatha jhana. For samatha jhana, we burn hindrances. Not completely burning, but temporarily suppressing. Anyway, when the sleepiness arises, we arouse this thought, wholesome thought, to cut off sleepiness. What are the wholesome thoughts? And arousing this wholesome thought is called initial application of thought. And that is the moment the real right thoughts arise in the mind. Actually, as soon as you sit to meditate, in order to avoid this sleepiness and so forth, the meditator initially must practice these wholesome thoughts, such as soon as one sits, one must start the practice with radiating loving friendliness. That is the first thing one must do. practicing metta. Practicing metta to oneself and to all other beings without any discrimination. Sending metta to the north, northeast, east, southeast, south, southwest, west, northwest, north, up and down, covering entire 10 directions. Imagining that one is in the center and the whole area, everything around that person, the entire world protects that person by the metta. That means that when you send metta to all directions, you feel secure. You feel protected from all directions. That is how we begin. When initial thought arises, this is one of the thoughts that arise in your mind. That means when the sleepiness, in order to combat sleepiness, you got to recall this reserve you are fighting the enemy of Mara, sleepiness. So you tried all these other methods, you know, getting up, washing your face and this and that. But they don't work. If they don't work, then you call your reserve. That is your metta. That is one of the three wholesome thoughts. I said kusala vitakka, one of the kusala vitakkas. Vitakka in Sanskrit, vitarka, Pali vitakka means thinking, speculative thinking. Somebody whose temperament is more intellectual, who always thinks, is called vitakka charita. The person whose habit is just to think. And therefore the word vitakka is used for thinking. And here we have to use this particular thinking, particular thought, in order to support our practice of concentration. Any kind of thought is not going to help you to concentrate. Only very special, particular thought helps you to gain concentration. That only thought are the wholesome thought that helps you to concentrate. The only wholesome thoughts are the thoughts of friendliness. When you become friendly with yourself, with the whole world, with all living beings, you are very comfortable because you don't feel any enemy. When you don't feel that there is an enemy going to attack you, you feel very calm, very peaceful, very relaxed, very comfortable, settled. And that is the state of mind that you will have to overcome sleepiness, that you have to cultivate to overcome sleepiness. Now you can see, when the mind is calm, body is calm, without this particular thought, you fall asleep. Without metta in your mind, when you sit down, body can become relaxed. Mind can become relaxed, because everything around you is materially comfortable. Cushion is comfortable. And if you don't have this thought of metta, at that time, you fall asleep. So, Therefore, Buddha recommends when everything is comfortable materially, you have to cultivate this particular thought to make your mind very serene, calm, to remain alert. You are alert. You know that there are beings. You want to send this profuse power, you know, remarkable power of metta to all beings, including yourself. That is, that begins at the time when the mind is settled down. That is called initial, that is called vitakka. Without taking all this into consideration, somebody has translated this word into English as initial application of thought. Now, when we take all this into consideration, the word initial application of thought becomes meaningful. That is the moment initially you really will have your true, deep, powerful thought of friendliness. Then that thought sustain in your mind. When that thought sustain, your doubt with regard to your practice, because you will see the results of metta. When you practice metta, one thing you experience is your body and mind are relaxed, calm, peaceful. Second thing you experience is your sleepiness is disappeared. Instead of sleepiness, mind becomes very calm, peaceful, and active. Then Mara is not going to let you along, because Mara is always with you, trying to attack you. Take away your meditation. Make it difficult for you. Then what the Mara does, Mara sends his second army. What is that? Just the opposite of sleepiness and drowsiness. If sleepiness and drowsiness cannot work, Mara think, well, he has found, defense against sleepiness and drowsiness by cultivating metta. Let me send him my next regiment. Then he send the opposite of it. What is that? Restlessness and worry. You managed to overcome sleepiness and drowsiness, now you have to fight with the restlessness and worry. What is restlessness and worry? Now, when you look at all these things one by one, you see these are not some kind of superhuman or some kind of things that happen to somebody in a different world, that these are the things that happen to us, to an ordinary person. So, what is sleep, restlessness and worry? Worry is due to sometimes when you have done something, which is either not correct, wrong, or incomplete. You started a project and you could not finish it, you begin to worry about it. Or you have done something offensive, in the past, offense, something you have done, you have said to somebody which is not that good, not somebody appreciated, and you begin to worry about it. When you worry, restlessness arises. You become restless. Or you worry about your own practice. You worry, you know, sometimes when people try to meditate, especially jhana meditation, concentration meditation, because of this total misunderstanding of concentration or jhana meditation, that misunderstanding is that when you practice jhana, you attain to such a state that you become just like a vegetable. And people say, don't practice jhana, because it is very dangerous. You will never come out of it. You will rot to death. You will become stupid. And therefore don't practice metta. It is not Buddhist practice and so forth. And these thoughts can keep troubling you. And you worry about them. You, on the one hand, you experience little bit of peace, joy, and at the same time you have done or done incorrectly, done something offensive in the past, or something you are doing now that is like practicing jhana. You become you worry. Or you worry about something that may happen. You worry about what you are going to do. You worry about your family, your children, your job, your money situation, the stock market, and your health, thousands of future things that you even don't know that exist. But you can keep creating in your mind all kind of imaginary things. Or the world, SARS. anthrax.
West Nile.
All kind of things. Germs, virus, terrorist attack, bombs, mugging, robbing, millions of things in the world are there for you to worry. And every worry about the future can make you restless. So therefore these two go hand in hand together. Restlessness and worry. Worry and restlessness. In Abhidhamma there are seven hindrances. Because each of them, according to, as you know, Abhidhamma is a method which analyzes everything. According to this analytical method, five hindrances become seven hindrances. Because they put these two, describe these two separately. But these two are interrelated. So, see the way how the Mara works. Mara can bring you the memories from the past. Memories are important, but Mara particularly specialized selecting wrong things for you to remember. There are millions of good things to remember. Mara would never let you do that when you try to meditate. Mara will select all these past things, present things, and future things. So you keep worrying. Mind is full of worries. When the mind is full of worry, Buddha said, you are very much like a slave. He uses the word slave because a slave always worries that if he makes one little mistake, he would be very severely punished and thrown out of the house, onto the road, or put him in jail. And therefore he becomes restless. So he is always nervous. The slave is nervous always. Buddha said, when the mind is full of worries, you are nervous. That is why you are restless. So, at that time, you cannot concentrate. Now you are trying to concentrate. When the restlessness and worry arises, you cannot concentrate. Then what you have to do, you got to deliberately develop a method to take your mind away from this restlessness and worry. What you should do, this is where, you know, knowing various things come handy. Think of the qualities of the Buddha. When we think of the qualities of the Buddha, we have to understand who the Buddha is. Buddha was an embodiment of peace. Never worried about anything, although there are trillions of things for him to worry if he wanted, but he never worried. Sometimes you may think, well, he is the Buddha, therefore he did not worry. I am not Buddha, therefore I worry. At the same time, we must remember, he did not he was not free from worry after becoming Buddha. He became Buddha after getting rid of worries. That is the thing we have to remember. We don't become perfect after attaining perfection. We become perfect by slowly and gradually getting rid of imperfection. So that is why I said this morning, practice makes perfect. During the practice, we are imperfect. When we complete the practice, we become perfect. So Buddha became free from worries because he managed to get rid of worries slowly and gradually, little by little, in every life or every time he meditated. So we think of the Buddha and think of how peaceful he was, how serene, calm and noble he was. Think of the qualities. There are 9 qualities of the Buddha. Take each of them and think. You know, when you think of the qualities of the Buddha, you completely forget about your past worries, future worries, present worries. Mind is preoccupied with the qualities of the Buddha, which are always wholesome qualities, not one single negative quality. Then think of the Dhamma. 6 qualities of the Dhamma. And each of them makes you calm and peaceful. Then think of the Sangha. 9 qualities of the Sangha. You can see all of them in the Sangha Vandana. Take each of them. Focus the mind. And think of peace. That is called Upasama Anusati. Upasama. That is calming, tranquilling the mind. When you do that, your mind is so fully, there are 10 such reflections, they are called anusati. Buddha himself has recommended these things, and these are particularly very good subjects for gaining concentration or helping to gain concentration. So focus your mind on them, then mind becomes calm, relaxed, peaceful. Don't go to sleep. At that time you don't fall asleep. But you just manage to overcome your restlessness and worry. And you become temporarily liberated from restlessness and worry. Then, to support it, there arises joy when restlessness disappears. Now, when restlessness and worry disappears, joy arises. Then there arises, first one was sleepiness and drowsiness, I mentioned earlier. Sleepiness and drowsiness also are a pair of hindrances. Now doubt disappeared because of the sustained application of thought of friendliness. I forgot to mention two other thoughts of wholesome thoughts. Thought of friendliness, thought of compassion, thought of appreciative joy. You see, these three thoughts are called vitakka. When we have these three thoughts, your sleepiness and drowsiness disappears, I mentioned earlier. Now, joy arises. Now, I want to say, something about joy. You cannot create joy, you know, artificially. Sometimes people tend to think that all you have to do is to have a smile on your face. Feel joyful. And you can develop your happiness and concentration and so forth. You can create joy by thinking of joke. You sit to meditate and think of some joke in the past. Have a smile on your face. And focus the mind on that. To gain concentration. Friends, it's not going to happen that way. Joy arises from seeing inner tranquility. You become joyful that this particular hindrance is disappeared. Only when something you see within yourself peacefully, spiritually growing, then you become very serene and calm, and joy arises. It is not sort of a laugh, opening your mouth, showing mouth, showing your teeth and making noise. But it is inner joy that arises from within yourself, knowing, seeing, understanding, clarifying something inside. Joy arises. That is the spiritual joy. And when the sleepiness and drowsiness, what you call restlessness and worry, slowly fades away, you become so glad. So glad that it fades away. Then, Mara is not going to let you alone. Mara will send you the next army. That is, your sleepiness is gone, restlessness is gone, little bit of joy arises, but it doesn't stay there. You get angry. What happened to my joy? I struggle and I managed to get rid of my sleepiness, drowsiness, restlessness, worry, and spark of joy arises and it disappears. It happens again and again and again. You get angry with yourself. Or Mara send you reinforcement for you to remember some incident that happened in the past for you to get angry. Or you feel pain, aches and pain here and there. You get so upset, so disappointed, so angry. You sigh, you just manage to get little bit of joy and then pain arises. You know, drowning your joy. And you lose your practice. You got to change your posture. You get irritated, upset, disappointed, angry. So instantly that happens. So anger is another hindrance that arises. It starts with a very tiny little annoyance. Then it turns into irritation. Then it turns into anger. Then anger turns into even grudge. So we go to watch the stages of development of this grudge or anger. First, little annoyance, at that time, we must get rid of it right then and there. Now, here again, we forget our focus on the primary object. What is the primary object? We will talk about it later on. At least one primary object is our own breathing. So, we stop it and try to get rid of this particular hindrance. That is in this case, our anger. There are many, many, many things to do, even during meditation, to get rid of anger. I will spend one whole talk dealing with anger. But for now, since this is the first talk, I cannot bring all these things into one talk. I will discuss this in detail later on. So we learn to get rid of anger, using the things that we have to use. Now, one thing that comes handy to overcome anger is that very primary initial application of thought. What is that? Loving friendliness. Now, we began the meditation with loving friendliness. During the meditation, when anger arises, we go back and bring loving friendliness back to our mind and recall loving friendliness and use it when anger arises to overcome anger. Then we will see anger slowly fading away. When anger fades away, disappears, happiness arises. When happiness arises, happiness naturally leads the mind to concentration. Only happy mind gains concentration. I want to spend some more time about these things later on. When concentration arises, when happiness disappears, then before gaining concentration, Mara sent the last battalion to fight. That is something very close to concentration. It is almost identical. Just like the beginning army is identical with concentration, that is sleepiness and drowsiness, the last reinforcement of the Mara, Mara's army, also is very much close to concentration. What is that? Greed. When greed arises, generally people glue to something. Greed is something that latch you onto something. When greed arises, its very nature is gluing to something, clinging, holding on to it. So then the people can sometimes misidentify concentration with greed, or greed with concentration. For instance, when you are reading a very interesting book, you might say, you are so concentrated in your reading. When you read an interesting book, you are not actually having this kind of concentration. Your mind is actively participating in what you are reading. Because when you read, say, a novel, when there is a moment to arouse your emotion, you will be emotional. When you, sometimes you may cry, you may get angry, you may get upset, you may get, you know, irritated, angry and so forth, as you read the novel. Because you are participating in what is described in the novel. And you may say that you are so concentrated that you are with the scenes of the book. That is not concentration of this what you call spiritual type. That is gluing, clinging, becoming attached to the things that you read. When the true concentration arises, instead of becoming attached to the object, you remain aloof from the object. That means greed or clinging, craving disappears from your mind when you gain concentration. So the concentration is the opposite of craving or greed. They look identical. Greed, attachment, and concentration look identical, because the mind has to hold on to an object to gain concentration. But mind actually does not hold on to it. Mind rather let go of every clinging, craving that arises in the mind at that moment because of the desire, because of the happiness. Happiness alone, if it is an ordinary happiness, we become attached to the object that we are happy about. Or we become attached to the state of mind which arouses our happiness. But when the spiritual happiness or meditative happiness or jhanic happiness arises, we gain concentration without becoming attached to the object. So, when greed arises, concentration will disappear from the mind. When true concentration arises, greed disappears from the mind. So, when happiness arises, happiness leads to concentration. When concentration arises, greed disappears. So, we just have to remember what I was just trying to define jhana and how to attain it. So this is how we attain it. First, we have to see the opposite of five jhanic factors. They are five hindrances. Five jhanic factors are initial application of thought, that is wholesome thoughts, friendliness, thought of generosity, thought of friendliness, thought of compassion. They are Pali called, in Pali they are called Nekkhamma Vitakka, Avyapada Vitakka, Avihinsa Vitakka. Nekkhamma Vitakka means thought of letting go, that is thought of generosity. Avyapada Vitakka means thought of friendliness, letting go of our anger. Avihinsa Vitakka is thought of non-violence, cruelty, thought of non-cruelty. So we have a thought of generosity, thought of loving friendliness, thought of compassion. Non-cruelty means compassion. That is initial application of thought. Their maintenance is called sustained application of thought. Then we have joy, happiness, and concentration. When initial application of thought arises, sleepiness and drowsiness will disappear. When it sustains in the mind, doubt disappears. Then when joy arises, restlessness and worry disappears. Then happiness arises, anger, hatred disappears. Then concentration arises, greed disappears. So when these hindrances disappear from the mind and the jhanic factors arise, when they work together in unison at one place, we are said to be in the first jhana. Okay? I think that will be enough for introductory talk of this is the outline or this is the description of the first jhana. But it is it has various other things to that we have to discuss. There are various other things for this jhanas. So we will discuss them later on, because I'm going to give few more talks on this topic, and this is the first introductory talk. So I like to have a short break, and you may have a little break and come back and then do a little meditation, and after that you can have a discussion. Each break number reduces. I should have not given any break. Here is a question. Question is, Bhante, this morning you told us about the Buddha advising an arahant that he should forget about the 999 persons he killed. Because life before arahantship didn't count. But to the average person, if the if the arahant didn't admit to the murders, he would be considered a liar or hypocrite. How are these two views to be reconciled? I don't know whether I said that 999 people he killed were not counted. They didn't I don't know whether I said that they didn't count.
They didn't count that day, there may have been more, but they didn't count.
Yeah. What I said was he killed 999, counted, and then he had killed many more, which he did not count. And he did not know how many he killed without counting. From the time he started counting, he killed 999. And before he started counting, he had killed many more. That he did not know. That's what I wanted to say. I don't know whether I said that. But I did not say that the word count has so many meanings. You don't count them means you don't care. What I meant was counting literally, 1, 2, 3, 4, like that. So, they really were human beings, living beings, and their life was as important as anybody else's life. But what I wanted to mention was that particular state of mind these arahants had after attaining enlightenment was pure, clean. The karmic consequences of killing those people was not wiped out. Even after attaining arahanthood, Angulimala had to go through a lot of suffering. When he went out for collecting food, sometimes instead of food, people who came to know that he was a murderer, they threw rocks at him. I don't know whether they threw rotten eggs at him. But they definitely insulted him, beat him up, and did not give food, and he got into a lot of troubles after that. As the result, very minute part of his bad karma. However, since he attained full enlightenment, after death, he was not reborn to bear the fruit of his unwholesome karma, because once you attain enlightenment, you will not be reborn. That is where all the karmas, all the karmic consequences become defunct, null and void. So please don't misunderstand that I said their lives was not lives. you talk about greed and ignorance. What about hatred? Can you clarify? I heard as all things are, all things come from greed, hatred and ignorance. I'm glad you asked me this question also. Yes. You know, it is very interesting. There are, these are three roots. Greed, hatred and delusion are the three unwholesome roots. Although there are three unwholesome roots, most of the times greed and ignorance are mentioned. For instance, in dependent origination, hatred is not mentioned at all. In the dependent origination, only ignorance is mentioned. Attachment is mentioned. In the Four Noble Truths, Buddha said, cause of suffering is greed. Hatred is not mentioned. I did not mention the hatred this morning, not because of those two reasons, but because once you have greed, you definitely have hatred. When you have ignorance, you definitely have hatred. So, hatred is understood. It comes as a package. These three come in one package. Three in one. When you buy one, other two come together with that. So we even don't have to talk about it, because it comes. We have to talk about greed and ignorance, because both are the partners to bring out hatred. After concentrating on the breath for a while, it feels as if there were an iron bar lying across the chest. Might it be that the effort is too much? I think if you feel that such a stiffness in your chest, you can do two things. One, instead of focusing your mind on the breath, you focus your mind on the rising and falling of the abdomen, which is not the breath itself, but the secondary function of breathing. When you focus mind on the breath, you feel, you just focus mind on the breath itself. When you focus mind on the abdomen, you focus the mind on the result of breathing. So you can avert that hard, you know, stiff feeling on your chest. That is one thing you have to do. Second thing is, you may focus your mind on the feeling itself, the heart feeling itself, instead of the breath or the abdomen. And so that iron-like feeling will disappear. Could you explain perception and consciousness? Perception is recognition. When you see an object or hear a sound, feel a feeling, you mentally recognize that. Recognition is called perception. Consciousness is general awareness, awareness of everything without particular particularizing, without identifying any particular thing. You simply generally become aware. The consciousness is the basis of everything that we experience. Perception or recognition is the part of the mind, the consciousness. So you can see the difference between these two. Perception is more distinct, more clear. Consciousness is very general awareness. Where is the point of awareness when we inhale and place the feet in front while simultaneously the back heel rises? Now, this is where we got to walk very slowly, mindfully, not to, generally this almost happens simultaneously while putting the, while touching the foot with the floor, or while touching the floor with your foot. Normally, if you are not mindful, the heel of the other foot also rises. But if you walk slowly, mindfully, you deliberately wait until this foot is settled on the floor to lift the heel of the other foot. So you can make the clear distinction between the resting one foot on the floor and lifting the heel of the other foot. So here is a question of slowing and being mindful of these two occurrences. So the point of awareness shifts from the touch, your foot touching the floor, that is, awareness will be there, and then it shifts to the heel when you lift the heel while breathing in. So awareness will not be in between these two. You see, when you mindfully touch, awareness will be there. Focusing mind on every point of touch from the beginning of this is, assuming this is the heel, so you slowly press it, every point from back to the front of the heel, you feel touching the floor. When the last point touches the floor, then mind goes to the heel of the other foot. And while lifting, you breathe. As I mentioned, this is very important to remember. Always, while breathing in and out, something else is happening. That is what you see in all these discourses like Anapanasati Sutta, Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta and so forth. Say for instance, Anicca Anupassi asasisami sikati anicchanupassi passasisami sikati. That is, while seeing impermanence, I breathe in. While seeing impermanence, I breathe out. That means two things happening. Impermanence is happening and breathing is happening. Always two things. While being mindful of long breath, you breathe in. While knowing the long breath, you breathe out. So knowing is one, breathing is another. While knowing short breath, you breathe in. While knowing short breath, you breathe out. So two things. So, while touching the floor, with the floor we breathe in, and while continuing the breathe in, we continue to become aware of the point of touch of the floor with the foot. So along with the breath, all these things happening, we are fully aware of all this while breathing in. And similarly, we become fully aware of everything that happens while we breathe out. While breathing in, so many things happen. While breathing out also, so many things happen. Things happen so quickly. So tiny, tiny, little things happen. As our mindfulness becomes sharp, more things we become mindful of, more things we become aware of. Another thing. Please explain the process of vipassana meditation and how it leads to insight. I think I hold on to this question to answer some other time, because this takes a lot of time to answer. And also very important question, I don't want to give a very, you know, quick answer and, throw it away. But I want to spend some time answering these questions in some details so that you can get a good understanding.